What's up, everybody? Long time no see, no listen. This is J-Bo, and I wanted to thank you for tuning in, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, to quote the fine gentleman over there at True Crime Garage. Man, it's been a long time. I've been taking a little break, and why? It's just one of those things, like, I wasn't feeling it. I did a couple, what I like to do is mine various scenes around America. I've mined just a couple, probably. At this point, I've mined, M-I-N-E-D, the Northwest, kind of sub-pop, third wave feminist scene for many years. And then my last little deal was I did a bunch of podcasts from people in L.A., from talking about life in L.A., people such as Don Bowles, who played drums for the Germs and now sings for Ariel Pink himself, a guy named Bobby Weirdo, who started Weirdo Music, what is it called? Weirdo Music Forever. Geneva Jacuzzi. Who else? Charlotte Linden Ercole Co. It's all kind of Ariel Pink centric, I guess. But anyway, I took a break because I was gonna do an interview with the guy from Holy Shit, who's another LA dude, and he said he'd do it, but then something happened and he didn't end up doing it. Totally fine. But I guess I just wasn't inspired, and I started this job. I don't know. I grow medical marijuana in Maryland, and it's a pretty cool gig. It's a little far of a drive. I drive like an hour and 45 minutes to get there. It's very much a learning experience. I learned a lot about plants, about growing, about marijuana in particular. I'm certainly not an expert, but I know more than the average person walking around the street. I mean, a couple things. Did you guys ever realize that if a plant gets stressed, it will actually grow a cock and balls? Did you guys know that? It will. At least it looks like a cock and balls. And the balls perform the same function. They provide the fertilization. And the cock, which would be a little tiny, they call it nanner, like a little nanner, like a banana. It looks like a banana, it sprouts. So basically when you grow pot, you don't want any males in the mix. It's a very sexist community there. The pot plants, the pot growers, they're very, very anti-male. The males will basically fertilize the females, and the females will produce seeds. And you don't want that, because we don't need their seeds anymore. We got clones, right? We clone the hell out of them. That's how we reproduce them. And I don't know if you guys knew this, but when a plant can kind of lose a leaf and a stalk and a stem, and it can like implant itself into the ground and grow a whole new plant. I wish humans could do that. That'd be pretty funky. If you could like cut your arm off at the forearm and just stick it in a womb and grow a whole new human. That'd be amazing, actually. But if you stress out a plant, it's trying to survive basically, and it grows these little yellow things and they turn into hermaphrodites. And you got to get rid of the hermaphrodites because they will pollinate the whole crop. And if you have a whole crop that's pollinated, you can go from something that's netting, I don't know, $3,000 a pound down to $1,000 a pound. You know, those might not be exact figures, but it's something like that. The $3,000 a pound would have no seeds in it. Means the THC is higher. It doesn't take all that extra energy to go to the seeds, so all the THC goes into the bud. And if it has seeds, then you have to grind it up and use it for oil or use it for shitty joints or something like that. It's all very interesting. There's little tiny hairs that you see on marijuana. They look like sugar, like it's called sugar leaf, they'll call it. But it looks like it just spread with like a sticky sugar, the buds and everything. Those are called trichomes, and it's very interesting that you have to look at them with a magnifying glass. And when you don't have to look at them that way, but if you do, they look like little tiny growths. They aren't actually like sugar. They're more like little tiny, I don't know, maybe mushrooms. They got a little head on them. And when they're immature, they're see-through, they're clear. And as they mature, they turn milky white and then amber. And the prime time to pick a bud, to harvest the bud, is when the ratio is roughly 30% amber trichomes. If you wait a lot longer, if they're all amber, you're going to have more of a couch lock sensation. It's kind of going to make you sit around and just maybe eat something and fall asleep and watch TV. Whereas if it's a little bit, 30% is the magic number of the trichomes, or the amber-looking trichomes. If you harvest the bud there, it's going to be its natural characteristic, whether that's a sativa, which is more of a head high. Well, it'll act, whatever. Sativas and indicas are two separate strains. But anyway, if you harvest with 30% trichomes, it will be that plant. It'll either be a sativa, which is more of a head high, or an indica, which is more of a couch lock high. I just fucked that all up. It's very interesting, and the buds at the place I work are unbelievable. I don't even smoke pot. Let's just call it paranoia. But ever since the age of about 18, I haven't been able to hit a joint. And it's never done anything to me good. It's always been a real bummer, like a real bummer. You know, it just narrows in on these little demons or little chinks in the armor, and just exploits the hell out of them. And I just basically have to pass out. So, I like growing weed. I love the smell of weed. I don't care for smoking it though. I smoke it about once a year, and it reminds me why I don't smoke. And I would say the same thing for most drugs. I've never done heroin. I've done cocaine a few times, and I do that one about every 10 years. I should say the last time I did it was about 11 or 12 years ago, and the 20 minutes of feeling pretty good was definitely not worth the 2 days of, just nasty, just feeling horrible, mental sickness, just bad, 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 bad. My serotonin gets sapped. Anyway, I went to Seattle. The reason why I'm coming back, I wanted to tell you about Seattle. I haven't been to Seattle in about, let's see. I drove back. I got here June 1st. So I guess 2 weeks prior to that, March, April, May. So June, July. It's been about, 16 months or something like that. And when I left Seattle, it was one of those typical things where I was like, man, fuck this place. I'm tired of this place. I'm done with this place. There's nothing here for me at all. And everything has kind of reached its natural conclusion, you know. My relationship was over. It was like a little over two years ago. My relationship was over. My Hollow Earth radio gig, where they suspended me for not locking the door, but really it was because I was a mental case. That was over. I was a mental case because I was going through a breakup, and I just, my last show, it was quite fitting. I was having a nervous breakdown, and I thought I was having a heart attack, and so I stopped the broadcast halfway through and went to the hospital, and I think that was the last time I worked there. I'm pretty sure they did me a favor in not letting me work there again. I was getting a little out there at that particular time in my life, but it was just, Seattle was ending, and so I left. I came to Pennsylvania, and started giving some care to my father, who has a myriad of things going on with him medically, mentally, and that's been very interesting. My grandmother's here, not at my house. I have a house here. My grandmother lives next door. Whatever. It's a long story. I won't get into that too much. But anyway, I had about a year and a half away from Seattle, and little things started cropping up about 6 months in, where I started missing little things about the Northwest, mainly the nature. It's very, very beautiful there. It's unbelievable when you go anywhere else. I mean, there's a few other places in America. I don't know, the Oregon coast is great. I guess that is the Northwest still. Arizona is phenomenal. New Mexico is beautiful. That whole stretch between Las Vegas and Albuquerque is just unbelievable. But the Northwest is very pretty. Lots of water, lots of rain, lots of fog, lots of silver skies. Birds, big-ass birds, man. The seagulls, one of the first things I recognized about Seattle was how big the seagulls were. They were massive. They were the size of chickens. Seagulls on the East Coast are about, they look like skinny pigeons. The ones on the West Coast straight up look like chickens. And I'm curious why the homeless population doesn't eat them more often. But I'm sure they can, you know, it's very progressive, very liberal out there. You can find food banks. You can find free food. I'm sure that's much better than eating a seagull. So I went to Seattle. Didn't know what to expect. I had that great feeling. Total, like, euphoric. And not, I don't know. I didn't know how I wanted to feel about it. I didn't want to love going back, because that would mean I would, like, hate my life now. I didn't want to hate it, obviously. But I was right there in the middle when I got there. I flew Spirit Airlines, and Spirit Airlines is my favorite. It's so good. All right, payment to Bandcamp, paid. Spirit Airlines, I would like to represent that company. They are so cheap, and they're so rock and roll, and it's just cheap. It's just bare bones. You get one backpack. They don't give you a Coke. They don't give you chips. You get to bring one backpack on. You have to print out your receipt, and you go, and that's all you need. And as long as you can keep your belongings down to that, you're golden. And I got a round trip to Seattle for like $200, which was unbelievable. When I saw the price, I said, well, I have to do that. I mean, I could buy, you know, a few dinners over the course of a couple weeks and spend that much money. You know, it's not a lot of money. And so I took this kind of fucked up flight where I went from Pittsburgh and went to Vegas, and then something with the air conditioning or something in Orlando where my flight was delayed in Pittsburgh, so I missed the flight in Vegas. They put me up in Vegas. It's actually a really cool resort, and I got a $4.95 steak dinner at about 2 in the morning. I didn't really get to enjoy the hotel room, though. It was very quick. I slept for about 4 hours. Got up the next day. Vegas is wild. Beautiful, dusty, dry-looking brown mountains and kind of a haze everywhere. I think that's just dust, you know. And it's really hot. But it's not really muggy. It's an interesting kind of hot. It's kind of a refreshing hot. You'll feel little crystals of perspiration on your stomach occasionally, but you don't really sweat. At least I didn't. And that was a welcome change from Pennsylvania and, you know, Florida, which I was used to when I grew up. I grew up in Florida and all that. But long story short, got on a plane over to Seattle, hit Seattle about 10 in the morning. There's this thing called light rail in Seattle, and it's a train that goes, it's really, really convenient. It goes from the airport the whole way downtown through my old neighborhood and up now to a couple different cool areas like Capitol Hill and University District. And I knew they have a policy where you can ride. So they tell you you have to pay before you get on, but you don't. You just kind of get on. And every few rides, these guys and girls who look like stormtroopers and really heavy, like, looks like riot gear practically. It says Fare Police or something. And they come on, F-A-R-E, police. They come on and they ask you if you've paid. And if you haven't, they pull you off the train and they give you a talking to. But you can kind of play stupid, right? And that's the name of the game. And I believe you get one free pass every year. So I knew, at least I assumed that was still happening, where I could probably ride for free. And it was, I don't know, it was probably $7 to get to downtown. Not too expensive. But, you know, I'm on a budget. I'm flying Spirit. I got one bag. Going to a wedding. Got things to buy for the wedding. So I wanted to chance it, you know. So I got on the light rail. And I got downtown. And it was glorious. I got to Pike Place Market. I didn't have to pay. The stormtroopers never ever showed up. And I made that a point to my trip the whole time. To not pay for light rail, and I made it 5 for $5 the whole trip downtown, from downtown to like Capitol Hill, from where downtown to Capitol Hill to the University District, wherever, five or six separate rides, never paid once, saved a lot of money. It was great. Made it downtown. The first thing I did was have a slice of pizza, and I ordered a root beer. It's an amazing slice of pizza. It's a place called Lo Priori Brothers Pasta Bar. It's in Pike Place Market. Some of the best pizza I've ever had. I bought one slice, and I bought a root beer. And the root beer was $4. And when I saw that the root beer was $4, I was like, God damn it. That's more than a slice of pizza. Since when did Seattle get so goddamn expensive? So I, like a prick, I signed my credit card receipt. I actually wrote on there. This is the first time I've ever done that. I wrote, I must have been, you know, jet lagged and pissed off. I wrote, your drinks are too expensive. And I didn't tip them. You know, whatever. I would have only tipped them a dollar anyway. It was, like, really quick, you know? And then later, somebody told me there's a sugar tax in Seattle, so any soda gets, like, an added 50 cents or dollar added to it. So I was like, eh, I felt kind of like a dick. But I learned something, you know? So I left the pizza restaurant, and then I made my way out to, and I saw Tiny's Organic, where I used to work, and I got some Pluots, and I told the guy I worked there, and he gave them to me for free. So I guess it all worked out, right? I got Pluots for free, but I overpaid for the soda. Walked over to EMP Museum, which is Mopop now, saw the Pearl Jam exhibit. I respect Pearl Jam. I think they're very talented. Eddie Vedder seems like a really nice dude, but I've never really loved Pearl Jam, you know? It was a great exhibit, but something to me, and I know it's, you know, people love this band. I don't know. They didn't seem like the legitimate article, even though I know that in a lot of people's minds they are. I think possibly in the day there was two camps. There was Nirvana camp and the Pearl Jam camp. And I've allowed rivalries in my own mind between bands to kind of maybe ruin my experience of certain bands throughout my life. So yeah, that was one of them. I don't think I could ever fully join the Pearl Jam camp because I was a real big Nirvana fan. Years later in Seattle, there was Death Cab for Cutie and Modest Mouse. I pitted those two against each other. Went with Modest Mouse. I never cared about Oasis or Blur, really. I guess I was in the Oasis camp. I guess at some point I thought Oasis and Radiohead were similar, or contemporaries, but then I realized that Oasis was fading out and Radiohead was unbelievable. So anyway, I went to the Mopop exhibit, and that was very interesting. They let me in for free. I basically went up to the counter, and I just was real straight up with them. I said, hey, how you doing? I said, I used to work here, and here's the deal. I'd like to go through your museum. I said, it's not really worth me paying for because I know most of the museum, but I'd like to see what's added to it. I can drop a couple names of people that worked here. One of the guy's names I dropped actually had died. His name was Bob, I believe. Or no, Jim. Jim had died. Jim was a very cool guy. Rest in peace, Jim. And I remember him being quite sick when I worked there. But I said, I'm not willing or able to pay right now. You know, right now. And anyway, long story short, they gave me a sticker and I went in. Saw the Pearl Jam exhibit. Came out an hour later. Actually, there's a Nirvana exhibit in there as well. So yeah, it's funny, Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And the Nirvana exhibit's crazy. I mean, one of the reasons I feel so strongly about Nirvana, I don't know. I saw where Pearl Jam came from, and I know they're Seattle pride, you know. They came from Mother Love Bone. And I never liked Mother Love Bone. I'm sorry that Andrew Wood died of a heroin overdose. That's tragic, but I used to watch this tape I had of Mother Love Bone, but the guy was talking about touring with Warrant, and that's what he would do that, you know, and they were just like a Northwest version of hair metal, like, kind of like an intelligent hair metal with a conscience, but Pearl Jam became, Mother Love Bone became Pearl Jam with a different singer, and they're great, but Nirvana was like kids, like scumbag kids, like the Ramones, like kind of unemployable people and just dirtbags in an affectionate way. Like I say scumbags and dirtbags like they're part of my own tribe, right? Where, I don't know, just kind of dirty, I guess, and do it yourself and who gives a fuck and give the finger to the man and I don't know. The instruments in the Nirvana room were just pieces of crap, you know, that were destroyed from Cobain smashing them. And they just weren't that cool, and they weren't really that stylish. They kind of came from nowhere. And I guess that's why I looked at them as a little more legitimate than Pearl Jam, if I had to, you know, pick. Because they worked with a lot less, you know, and made almost as much. And then, of course, the way they went out was incredibly depressing and a huge deal if you were around at that time. But, yeah, so anyway, there you go, Nirvana, Pearl Jam. I went to a wedding in Seattle, my buddy John Fox. I haven't seen John Fox in about 2 years, but he was actually one of the very first people that ever got on the shit show. And that would have been back in about 2013 or 12 at Hollow Earth Studios. And originally when I started the show, that's what it was. I was just going to interview my buddies and play music and talk about music. It turned into like, hey, wow, that person who I've heard of will totally get on my show. Oh, and that person will too. And it was a decent interview, you know. And I'll put it out as a podcast. But I just used to have my buddies on it, you know. Really no ambition whatsoever. And not that we've made a lot out of it, but more than I ever cared to think about. So I think you can actually, if you Google the shit show with J-Bo SoundCloud, I think you can come up with some of those John Fox interviews. He's a funny dude. Anyway, he got married, and the wedding was killer. He had a Filipino taco truck there, and he's half Filipino and half Czech, I think. But the thing that struck me about that wedding is I know John very well, and he's one of the easiest guys you'll ever get along with. He's just, you know, he's slightly polarizing somehow. People like him, people don't like him. I mean, I think most people like him now, but to me, he's always been just the nicest, like, most laid-back dude you'd ever meet. He's like almost 7 feet tall. He's like a massive guy. He could, you know, I did whip his ass on the beach one time, but, you know, that was kind of a fake wrestling deal, and he split his pants, and if he had gotten up, if I had let him get up from that predicament, maybe he could have done something to me, but I made sure he submitted. I had him in a chokehold. But I embarrassed him at the wedding, so I won't tell that whole story here. Anyway, we're good friends, and the thing that struck me about the wedding is how easy it was to get along. There was no uptight people, you know. It was all real laid back, real cool. People were dancing with horse. I don't know, I found it very funny. There were horse masks. They had, like, horse heads on their bodies, and they were dancing around like nothing was happening, and it was just surreal to me. I know it's just silly, a rubber horse mask, but it really made me laugh my ass off. It was great. John had a best man that was a woman, and she had, like, a jacket on, a bunch of tattoos on her chest, and her husband told me about corresponding with Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, you know. And we talked about George Romero and the Savini School of Makeup, you know, which is around here. I'm in Pennsylvania right now, but George Romero, the guy who started, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, he's a master horror filmmaker. But this dude heard I was from Western Pennsylvania. We started talking, and I said, oh yeah, I've been to the Monroeville Mall, you know. I guess Dawn of the Dead was filmed at the Monroeville Mall. Very eclectic bunch of people. And I don't know. I got a sweet place to stay that night. I stayed at a hotel. No. The night before, I stayed at a hotel. It was the only hotel I stayed in my entire trip in Seattle. And it was really cool. John's new wife paid for it. It's like I said, you know, they were stoked that I came the whole way from Pennsylvania. But yeah, there was... My trip to Seattle had crazy living quarters, you know, as far as where I was sleeping quarters, rather. I stayed at my buddy Big Nate's, who's a great dude. I don't think he knew I was coming, though. Then I get there, and he had rented out his couch, which I thought where I was going to sleep. And he said, well, if you had been here to help me, you know, clear off the side of the bed there, I wonder if, you know, maybe that's where you could have slept. But as it is now, you got a space behind the television. And, you know, there was a little space behind the television. It was about 2 feet by about 6 feet. And the whole place smelled like ammonia, like cat piss. And I was going to lay on this carpet. I said, well, I traveled really light, Nate. Do you have a pillow or do you have a blanket? And he's like, hold on a second. So he goes and gets his blanket. He comes back. He's like, okay, here's the deal with the blanket. The cat pissed on this side of the blanket. The side with the owls you can sleep on. The other side, avoid. So he gives me this one blanket. I was like, so let me get this straight, Nate. You want me to sleep on the pissy carpet and cover up with the pissy blanket? I was like, if I have to use this blanket because it's the only thing in the house, I'm going to sleep on top of the blanket, but thanks. You know, I'll sleep on the side with the owls on it, and I won't get too close to the piss. But the thing is, the blanket was really thin, so I'm sure he was just covered in piss. Unless he was fucking with me, which I guess is possible, too. So anyway, he threw that down. He got me a sheet, which smelled relatively clean, and I had a horrible night's sleep, you know. I was in Kent, got up the next morning, took a bus downtown. And then stayed at my buddy Jimmy Cow's house. Shout out to Jimmy Cow. The man has turned me on to so much amazing Asian food. It's unbelievable. In particular, Vietnamese food. If you guys have never been to Seattle, one of the great things, and I can never find it anywhere, is the Asian food there. It's cheap. I love Thai food. I love Vietnamese. Thai food, I always get the pad Thai. And I love the Thai iced tea as well. But the pad Thai is just always my go-to. I want to try other things, but nothing ever seems to... That's not going to trump it. You know, nothing's going to trump the pad Thai. But Vietnamese is really my jam, because you can't get Vietnamese anywhere. You can kind of get Thai around here a little bit. Probably not that great. But Vietnamese, like, there's a couple different things I absolutely adore. One is called a vermicelli bowl, and it's rice noodles. And it's got lettuce and fish sauce and egg roll and beef and pork and shrimp sugar cane. Sorry, so it's shrimp that's, like, in a blender. And then it's you get a piece of sugar cane and dip it and cover it with this, like, molten. It's not molten, but it's liquefied, thick-ass shrimp, like you're coating French toast with eggs or something. Then you deep fry it, and it's unbelievable. But anyway, you mix that all together and eat it out of a bowl, and it's called a vermicelli bowl. It's dope. And there's the banh mi, which are French loaves of bread, like French baguettes, with this amazing concoction of pork and marinated vegetables, and it's barbecue pork and peppers, and it's just unbelievable. I love it. Anyway, Jimmy Cow, he let me crash on a futon when I told him the horror story of Big Nate's. Thank you, Big Nate, by the way, for letting me crash. I'm just saying. It was gross, but I still appreciate it 100%. Jimmy let me stay. Jimmy's leaving town. He's an unbelievable dude. Him and his wife, Shannon. I got to hook up with those guys and hang out a couple different times and just run into them accidentally, and it couldn't have been nicer. It was like nothing ever changed, you know. With our friendship, you know, those are the best kinds of friends, where you can just kind of go and pick up and smile and bam. It's just cool, great chemistry. That's how it is between me and Jimbo. And that's kind of how I felt about Seattle a little bit. I always looked at Seattle as a livable city. Very, very livable. Not the most exciting, although compared to where I am now, it is pretty goddamn exciting. And it's grown in its exciting nature. It has. There's a lot more going on now than there was 20 years ago. But it's very livable, and it was kind of like an old friend, I guess, not to be too cheesy. But I went there, and I knew every corner of that city. There was no place where I was walking where I didn't know exactly what was around the next corner. The Amazon buildings were kind of strange to look at, but whatever. It was all the exact same. People say how much that city has changed, and I'm sure it has as far as prices go, and I'm sure it has if you're in certain places with all the fancy people walking around. But to me, not spending money, not trying to make a living there, not trying to live there, it was great, and nothing had changed. So I don't know. I've said this before, where it was great to go on vacation and not feel like you couldn't find a place you wanted to see, or didn't get to go somewhere you wanted to see, or have to rush around. Because, like, everywhere I went, it's just where I was. And I knew everything about it, you know? I knew every little coffee joint. I drank so much great coffee. I was drinking, like, 2 macchiatos every morning. It was just a really good time. One of the things I really enjoyed was it's always been a technologically advanced city, but particularly there's these things called, I don't know, everybody's just locked in, you know. It's a little bit scary because everybody's locked in all the time, you know, Big Brother monitoring you and all that stuff, but I won't get into that whole part of things. I just kind of went with it on this trip. there's these little things called lime bikes, and it's probably a touristy thing and probably annoying to the locals, but to me, it was radical, because I didn't have to get a bus. I didn't have to, basically it's a lime bike, and you put an app on your phone, and you scan in the little barcode on the bike, and it unlocks and makes this like ice cream truck sound, ding, 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 you know, something like that. And I got on my first bike. I was like, this is great, a bike. But then I started pedaling it, and I noticed it said electrical assisted, which basically means you never have to pedal that hard, and it goes like pretty damn fast, like almost with traffic. Like I was going, I don't know, 15 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, probably 15, barely pedaling up hills and shit. It was unbelievable. I was going from like the university district the whole way to Ballard, you know, which a cab would be $10, a bus would be $3, but it would take you an hour. Just going through traffic like a champ, like just wind in my hair, seeing the scenery, you know, feet on the ground, you know, not feet, you know what I mean, just on the ground, looking around, like just living it, loving it. For, I don't know, it was $1 to unlock the bike, and it was 15 cents a mile or something, so, you know, maybe $2, made it the whole way across. And then I'd go downtown, and it was just a great way to get around. So yeah, the Lime bikes were dope. I felt, I don't know, I was on vacation, so I didn't mind cheating that it was an electrical-assisted bike, but I really did enjoy those. It was just an amazing way to get around the city. I just felt really free, you know. I figured out why people love being on motorcycles so much, because it feels like they're flying. I figured that out, and I think bicycles are a little bit similar. And this was great. It was a great way to get around. Let's see. My girlfriend, she stayed home, unfortunately. I really would have liked her to have come. But you know, I lived so long by myself where I never like had to worry about paying for somebody else or just worrying about, so my automatic mode is like, oh yeah, I'll just go do this, like who cares, you know, that she's got stuff to do, I got stuff to do, it'll be fine, you know. She took offense to it though, and kind of hit self-destruct a little bit. She does not handle it well when I leave town, let's just say. And the texting got really weird, and there were some, you know, faux breakups, and some emotions were real high, but, you know, I'm back now, and it's good. It's good. It's better than ever. We're in a really good place. I just had to let her know, you know, like, hey, I'm not leaving. I didn't cheat on you. Nothing happened. I'm sorry my phone died that one time for 4 hours. I literally was just trying to, like, walk around sweaty, you know. Oh, I did find a really cool rock poster. So Arthur Buck, I didn't see any shows when I was in Seattle, but whatever, that's fine. I sang Interpol's Slow Hands. I actually might go see Interpol on Monday in Columbus, Ohio. I love that band. But Arthur Buck, Peter Buck and Joseph Arthur, I believe, have this project. Both talented people, and I could see why they got together. Similarly kind of jangly, folky songwriters, if they want to be. And I missed the show, but I was at the Crocodile. I saw the great psychedelic poster, and it was just one of those. I said, man, I'd love to have that on my wall. And I was like, the show's over. Can I ask somebody to keep can I have this poster? But the Crocodile wasn't open. So I reached up and like pulled on the case, and the case just opened right up. And I got to have this poster. I just took it off, and I still have it. I sacrificed a lot of comfort getting that thing back, you know, through all these plane rides, and but it's a great poster, and I can't wait to put it up. I don't know if I should frame it. I mean, framing it's such an adult yuppie thing to do, but then again, if you just like tape it to the wall, it gets fucked up. But maybe, I don't know, man. That's a big dividing line between 20 somethings and 40 somethings is the poster deal. You know, they mean a lot. So when you're older, you put them in frames. When you're younger, I remember just like fucking them all up, you know, putting duct tape around every border, you know, just putting it on the wall so it could never ever be perfect again, you know. But it was a phenomenal trip, and It was exhausting, but I would rather have it be exhausting than just boring as fuck or waiting around somebody's house to wait for them to do something. I did exactly what I wanted to do, and it was awesome. I got to dance. I got to sing karaoke. I got to eat unbelievable food, drink coffee, and see every fucking neighborhood in that city. I saw the International District. I saw down by the waterfront. I saw Pike Place Market. I saw Belltown. I saw Queen Anne. I saw Ballard. I saw Fremont. I went to Snohomish for a wedding. U District. Capitol Hill. On and on and on. And it was great. First Hill. So, what else can I say about the Seattle trip? Other than it was really good to be back. I don't think it's changed that much. Would I ever move back there? I kind of doubt it, because I've done Seattle. But if I had a good reason to, it wouldn't be the worst city to live in. Probably one of the best, I would guess. Are there other cities I'd rather live in? I would try a couple other cities. I think Albuquerque seems really cool, really beautiful, really kind of gritty, kind of outlaw. You know, New Mexico seems cool to me. I like it. They blew off nuclear bombs in New Mexico. Do you know what I mean? I think Austin, Texas, wow. I'm really into Alex Jones. I think Alex Jones is just fucking, like, an amazing, energetic dude. And Jesus, they've just banned him off everything. And there's far worse people, or at least as bad, things they say, things that are being said, and those people are not banned. So Austin, Texas, I don't know. I wanted to move to Austin, Texas before I ever listened to Alex Jones, but it just does, it does seem like a great city. You know, Austin, Texas and Portland, Oregon, I've already always said that they just are feeling themselves. You know, they know who they are. They're rad. They're young. They're popping at all hours of the night. New York City's that way too, but we know that. And LA presumably is the way as well. What else here? I talked about Nate. I talked about John Fox. What's in the future? I have this crazy notion, and you guys will obviously, if you like this podcast, tune in. I'm going to try to do it every week. I've been slacking, and the only way you can build a podcast, honestly, is to do it every week. A lot of people do it 3-4 times a week, and that'd be great, but I do have other things going. But you kind of need to do it at least once a week. So I'm trying to do it on the Tuesday model. I'm trying to release, you know, a 30 to 45 minute podcast on Tuesday. Hopefully get some momentum and just keep it up and just keep fluid with it and just make it part of my week. And the idea was to do it for 52 weeks straight for 1 year. And by the end, I have mad crazy sponsorship and I don't have to work a day job and I can concentrate on podcasting and music. Mm-hmm. And my book I'm writing. But I think that's it. I want to thank you guys for listening to me here in my trip to Seattle. What's going on this week for me? I might be going to see Interpol on Monday night, which means I drive from Cumberland, Maryland, the whole way. So I get off work in Cumberland, and I drive the whole way to Columbus, Ohio, which is just over 4 hours, see Interpol, and then drive back to Greensburg. And then I get off the next day. So I wanted to see if I could do a podcast here tonight before I go to bed. I'm about to go to bed. I took a shower. I haven't had coffee. I haven't had a brain pill, a nootropic, as it were. But I need some of that stuff. This show might have been better had I taken that. But I will tell you that I've been speaking now for, I don't know, close to 45 minutes. And it's no sweat. Just pouring out of me. But that's about what I wanted to do, 45 minutes tonight. Hey, thanks for listening to my Welcome Back podcast. I'm going to try to do it every week for a year. We'll see. No promises. You have listened to The Shit Show with J-Bo. Thank you so much. This is an amazing avenue to express myself. Podcasts are so fucking cool. If you want a recommendation on a podcast, I would say I love Case File. Case File is unbelievable. It's a true crime podcast. Joe Rogan, everybody knows about, but I will say that his latest interview with Elon Musk like brought tears to my eyes. Elon Musk is one of those people that it's like he's bombarded with images from another dimension or like from aliens or something like that to propel humanity forward. You know, like you see a lot of these guys, and they're visionaries. And I think that vision, I don't know for sure, but they actually get visions. Like, where does that come from? Elon Musk is an exceptional human being. He claims to be pro-human. And at the end, he just said that love will fix everything. Like, up inside his head, he's a very thoughtful person, but at the end, he was just, love, he said something about love. It was a total hippie sentiment. It was just, but love will improve everything. You know, there's no substitute for love, and we got to quit judging. We got to quit telling people, or quit basically thinking people are horrible and bursting out and telling them that on the internet and stuff. And he just, it was very touching to me. Like, I was like, oh my God. But anyway, that's a great podcast. Go listen to that. Joe Rogan, Elon Musk, go listen to Case File. True Crime Garage is great. I don't know, man. Go listen to Alex Jones. Whether you like him or hate him, it's entertaining shit. So this is the Shit Show with J-Bo, and we will talk soon. Thanks once again. Have a great night. Or day. Later.